It can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
You know success when you see it, or you think you do, the people in the spotlight. But what about those small business masterminds who succeed at making their money work harder? They do that by having a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, which now earns 5% annual percentage yield. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
Will robots conquer the world and take away hundreds of millions of jobs from humans? It's not looking likely anytime soon. That's because right now, there are more job openings than there are unemployed workers. So how do we keep the economy running smoothly with all these unfilled jobs? Maybe the answer isn't robots, but keeping older workers employed and hiring those who want a job. Welcome to Benchmark. I'm Scott Landman, an economics editor with Bloomberg News in Washington. Returning to the show as guest co-host is Chris Condon. He's a Bloomberg reporter here in D.C. who covers the Federal Reserve and U.S. economy. Chris, welcome back to Benchmark.
Glad to be back, Scott.
So, Chris, we're coming off a pretty strong U.S. employment report last week. The U.S. added another 223,000 jobs in May, and the unemployment rate ticked down to 3.8%. But one thing that struck me is that the participation rate among people age 65 and over is at 19.8%. And that means that about one out of every five Americans that age either has a job or is actively looking for one. And that's almost double the level from 20 years ago. Chris, why has this been important to the Fed?
Well, Scott, I think it's safe to say that this helps to complicate the job that the Fed has to do. As you know, they've got two jobs assigned to them by Congress, and that's to maximize employment in the United States, but also try to keep inflation balanced as close as possible to 2%. And sometimes those things come into conflict. So they vary, especially at times when unemployment, as it has been recently, has been dropping, they have to anticipate when is that tighter labor market going to result in higher inflation. Now, when older workers start behaving differently, that starts to change that calculus. If older workers represent a greater pool of available workers who perhaps will stay in the labor market or can be incentivized to come back in to the labor market, either full-time or part-time, that starts to complicate that calculation that Fed policymakers have to do about at what level will unemployment really begin to trigger inflation. I think when it comes to particularly on the lower income side, more older people making themselves available for work, that starts to delay that point in which low unemployment will trigger inflation.
So more older workers staying in or coming back in, you know, basically means a larger labor pool that overall holds down wages inflation and, you know, keeps interest rates lower for longer, all else being equal.
Right. On the other hand, if there are in the middle and upper income brackets, if older workers stay in the labor market longer, they are disrupting the process by which they may retire and are replaced by new folks just out of school, say. That has a disinflationary impact, and they're disrupting that. So in a way, it can work in both directions, and as I said, makes it more complicated for the Fed.
It is complicated, like you said. And I wanted to say that our interest in this issue was piqued by a Bloomberg opinion column by economist Tyler Cowen. You can check it out at Bloomberg.com. But now, to get some context, we spoke recently with two guests about this issue. Later, we'll hear from an executive with a utility company that won recognition for its policies aimed at retaining older workers. But first, here's our interview with Jean Setzvand, Senior Vice President of Programs at AARP, the nonprofit group that represents 38 million Americans age 50 and older. Jean, thanks for joining us on Benchmark.
Thanks for having me.
So I'm going to read a little bit of what Tyler Cowen wrote in his recent column, and I quote here, "I would suggest that the ability to spot, mobilize, and deploy older workers is the next biggest source of competitive advantage in the U.S. The sober reality is that many companies should retool their methods to fit better with the experience and sound judgment found so often in older workers. That also will involve a retooling of the glamour notion to valorize the young less and the idea of maturity more. HR departments may have to work harder to help older workers keep up with new technologies." Jean, can we talk a little bit about what he said about the glamour notion to valorize the young? How is it possible in our modern society to overcome some of these ingrained cultural notions?
Well, first of all, I want to sort of reach out and hug Tyler for what he wrote. I think he is spot on in terms of tapping into this whole notion of the experience class, or what we call older workers. I think the first thing we need to really do with employers, in particular HR staff and employers, is to kind of underscore the fact that there is a business case to be made for experienced workers. If you look at some of the studies that we've done in the past, we actually did a business case together with Aon Hewitt. We actually found sort of hard facts that show that for older workers, they are more motivated than their younger counterparts. They're more engaged. Both of those things really translate into higher productivity. And you couple that, quite frankly, with studies that have been done, particularly by sort of German researchers around the multi-generational workforce. When you actually have multiple generations in the workplace, it's as if all age groups actually increase in their overall productivity. So I think there is, first and foremost, the need to actually look at the hard facts in terms of what this will bring for employers, that there's a lot of positive aspects of having older workers in the workplace.
And when we talk about older workers, what kind of age are we actually talking about here? Is it 50, 55, 60, 65?
Well, there's a lot of breakdowns, right, from different definitions. By Department of Labor standard, they usually look at older workers as 55 and above. The typical sort of retirement age is usually 65 and above. All in all, I think what we're saying is we're actually seeing overall trends in terms of the older cohort of workers increasing in terms of growth. And if you look at, again, sort of the labor statistics, with population growth of the older segment growing more than the younger, we're going to see by 2024, again, this is based on Department of Labor's numbers, by 2024, the 55-plus segment will be roughly about 25% of the workplace, and that's probably the largest age cohort of all across the board.
Jean, why would you say the participation rate of Americans over 65 has been increasing? And in fact, it's been increasing since the 1980s. What's the short answer for why that's happening?
I think first and foremost, we have sort of the longevity bonus. I think all of us are living longer and healthier lives. So that's one aspect of it. And because of that, I think there's two things at play here. Because you're living longer, you have more productive years. At the same time, you have more years to actually fund from a retirement standpoint. So I think both of those factors is certainly what we see in our surveys as the reasons why people want to work longer.
But is it more because people want to work or because they have to work in order to make ends meet as their retirements or not their retirements, but their lives are lasting longer, as you mentioned?
Again, our surveys have been relatively consistent on this front. And financial needs from a worker's perspective in terms of wanting to work longer, it is financial reasons that are the main drivers. But I also find with some interesting sort of stats out there, when we actually look at retirees who actually work, both in terms of our surveys as well as the Retirement Confidence Survey does, again, longitudinal studies, when you actually look at what retirees are saying and why they actually go back to work or are working part-time, it really is that productivity aspect of trying to stay more engaged that is the driver, which I find interesting, right? If truly retirees are having a hard time funding their retirement, I would suspect that we would see that financial would still be the main driver, but that's not necessarily the case right now.
Hi, I'm Ron Kraszewski, Chairman and CEO of Stifel. Financial advisors, if you're not growing your practice, you're losing market share. Stifel is a growing, entrepreneurial, advisor-centric firm built for successful advisors like you. Imagine having the resources of the largest wirehouses and the support of the boutique shops, but none of the bureaucracy to get in the way of you serving your clients. At Stifel, it's your business, your book, your clients. I always tell the advisors we're recruiting, I want you to come to Stifel and double or triple your business. Most of them laugh and shake their heads, but I'm serious. Don't take it from me. Take it from Stifel's number one finish in J.D. Power's 2023 U.S. Financial Advisor Satisfaction Study. So, there's a reason why 148 financial advisors joined Stifel last year. Come join us and find out why Stifel is the firm where success meets success. Visit www.choosestifel.com.
Stifel Nicolaus & Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
Gene, how can employers be persuaded to embrace this, to retain and hire older workers? Should they be incentivized in some way, or is there education involved?
Well, I like to think about it this way. We've actually run programs for many years trying to highlight employers who've done this well. And we've seen that in certain industries, there are some employers that do this well because they have a chronic skill shortage. So if you look at, for example, healthcare, some from academia, as well as financial institutions where there's a chronic skill shortage, they actually do a very good job in having sort of this age-diverse workforce and really focusing on retention workplace policies and practices for experienced workers. So I think really having employers kind of underscore the true business value in having an age-diverse workforce is one aspect of this. What is interesting to me in the whole notion of education that I think we should really underscore is on the talent acquisition side. What we don't see a lot of is intentional hiring of experienced workers across the board. And a little bit of this, I think, to your point around education, I think could go a long way. Again, reinforcing, particularly among recruiters, the benefits of, again, multi-generational workforce, and also figuring out where best to tap the talent, because unlike ready-made scalable pools of new applicants in college grads or graduate school grads, I think it's probably a little bit harder to kind of find experienced workers on that.
Gene, I wanted to talk about a phrase I heard you just say. I heard you say intentional recruitment of older workers. And often when we hear about this topic, it's more in the context of age discrimination and how to deal with that issue. And I'm wondering, is age discrimination in the U.S. today, has it gotten worse in recent years, or is it better, say, than 10 years ago or 20 years ago?
It's hard to tell, I'll say that. But we just celebrated the 50th anniversary of the Age Discrimination Employment Act. And unfortunately, it's still very much out there. In terms of the trends, again, it's a little bit hard to tell for a couple of reasons. We definitely see basically the same number of reports, I would say, but in recent years, it's harder for particularly employees to file an age discrimination case because of the Supreme Court ruling against the Gross case. So age discrimination compared to other discriminations is almost a second class discrimination. There's a higher claim. In other words, if you want to file an age discrimination case, it has to be the sole force behind the disparate impact. So, but for anything else, that was the main reason why you were treated differently, unlike other factors where it's more of a motivating factor or a contributing factor. So it's, again, hard to say whether it's worse or not, but
older workers can run into some other barriers, Gene. How often would you say that when they're looking for a job, they're not necessarily disqualified because they're too old, but because the perhaps the employer thinks their salary requirements are too high, or because the position is more of a junior posting, those types of barriers. How important is that?
Our surveys don't exactly ask exactly the question that you asked, but we do have fielded this question focused on negative impact based on age. And our studies, again, over the course of many years have been pretty consistent in seeing that either 1 in 6 or 1 in 5 folks will tell us that they weren't hired as a result of their age. And we also have seen recently with another case, the Clyburn case out of the 11th Circuit Courts of Appeals, where there's a favorable ruling where for a while it was unclear whether job applicants were covered under the ADEA, Age Discrimination Employment Act, or whether it was a full-time employee if you had to be a part of that company already. But currently, there was an appeals case where this gentleman, Mr. Clyburn, was looking for a job, definitely qualified for a position that was soliciting for applicants that had no more than 7 years experience. And so he sued against the company. At first, he was overruled, but in the Court of Appeals in the 11th Circuit, they found in his favor, saying that job applicants are also covered under ADEA. So that is a favorable ruling on behalf of job applicants.
Clearly, Gene, you guys have a vast store of information on this topic, and it's been really fascinating speaking with you about this. Gene Setzvant of AARP, thank you so much for being with us on Benchmark.
Thank you for having me.
That was our interview with Gene Setzvant, Senior Vice President at AARP. Now, for a corporate perspective, here's our talk with Keith Hutchison. He's the Senior Vice President of HR and Chief Diversity Officer for National Grid USA. That's the American division of the UK-based electric utility. He joins us from their offices in Massachusetts. Keith, thanks for coming on Benchmark with us.
Thanks for having me.
So National Grid recently won an award from Columbia University's Public Health School for employers that excel at hiring and retaining workers over age 50. What would you highlight that sets National Grid apart in this regard?
So one of the things that sets National Grid apart is a couple of things, actually. Firstly, we are a long-term asset business. So the work that we do, the services that we provide for our customers are based on installing assets which are intended to last for decades. Many of the gas pipes and electric lines that provide energy needs to our customers today have either been installed or built many, many years ago by employees who have attained long service with our company. And so it's really important for us to be able to retain the experience around managing and maintaining those assets for our customers. And so as a result, the offering that we have to our employees is based on the fact that you join National Grid and there is a long-term career path for you with our company. We celebrate that by having career milestone awards for employees that exceed 40 years of service with our company. And that's crucial for us because they have the knowledge of the equipment, the assets that we have in the ground, overhead lines that need to be maintained every single day to provide a safe and reliable service to our customers. So this is we are in a different industry from others in that we rely on the long-term skills of our workforce, and we value it incredibly.
Keith, would you say that it's becoming increasingly important to National Grid, these workers that are, say, over 50?
It is. On the one hand, you could look at it and say that, you know, retirement for a lot of our workers is inevitable and that we just have to accept that fact and plan for it. We take a different view at National Grid. We say, actually, there is a really important role to for experienced workers to play in our company. For example, there is a war for talent in the market. You know, you've seen the recent unemployment numbers issued recently. Unemployment is going down, which means that the availability of talent and resources in the market is becoming incredibly competitive. And so for us, we are looking at the next generation of workers that need to be trained in how to do the work at National Grid. And that requires us to look at STEM-related career paths for new hires. But we need the workers, the experienced workers, to be part of the training and the knowledge transfer to those new folks coming into National Grid. Because many of the career paths that we have in our company require training and development for 5 or 6 years to be fully competent. That's a long time to join the company before you become fully competent to do a role. The role that an experienced worker plays in our company, not just doing the work, but mentoring and training the next generation, is incredibly important. So in our view, given the fact that we will be recruiting more people in advance of many of the retirements that are planned over the next 10 years, means that the role that they will play for our company is more critical now than ever.
So are you recruiting people that are older, or is it really you bring in people when they're younger and just work on making sure they stick around for a long time?
So it's a combination of the two. I think typically we have always looked at recruiting folks at a younger age and then training them. Actually, in recent years, we've taken a different approach, and that's generated a number of the initiatives that we have in flight now, which is looking at how might we attract folks who are more experienced, who might be at the midpoint in their career in other companies or on other industries that can be retrained, so that it's actually not just being fully reliant on people selecting engineering as a discipline or as a career path and joining National Grid so that we can train them. It's actually saying there is tremendous value in us attracting folks who might be who might have had a successful career elsewhere that we want to bring over to National Grid. So it's a combination of the two. And actually, one of the challenges that we have that we're grappling with at the moment is how do you make it attractive for somebody to leave an organization if they've been there for 20 years or so to join National Grid at that point? It's a different proposition than going out to the graduate market and saying, start your career with National Grid because we offer you X, Y, and Z. It's a completely different attraction challenge that we will have for attracting experienced workers. But it's one that we see the value in and one that we're prepared to invest in.
Do you have any estimates or hard numbers, Keith, on what proportion of your workforce is over 50? And perhaps is that, do you know whether that is increasing?
It is increasing. So at the moment in our U.S. business, 41% of our employees are over the age of 50. And that number is increasing. It is increasing every year. And we have both management employees and represented employees as well. And the numbers are broadly the same. For management employees, it's around 42%. And for our union workforce, it's about 40%. So broadly the same, averaging 41.
Now, Keith, you've worked in different parts of the business. Is there anything that you've personally learned in your career or any particular experiences you've had, you know, with mentors or older workers in your career?
Absolutely. I mean, I've been very fortunate enough to have moved around the business. I've worked supporting both our transmission, gas distribution side of the business, US and UK. And the one thing that I have always valued tremendously about National Grid is the incredible importance that history has in both our values, but in also how we develop people's career paths. So we have a tremendous history. We're not a company that is that has only been around for a few years, and a lot of our workers value that. And a lot of our learning about where we're going in the future is rooted in where we've come from. And the best place to get that, and in my personal experience through getting mentors, is how has the company, what has the company experienced up to this point, and what does that tell us about where we need to go next? That can be either in the HR profession or it can be within the operations profession. And I see it being incredibly important on both sides of that.
Now, Keith, as you know, unemployment in the U.S. has dropped below 4%. We hear a lot of reports of employers struggling to fill open positions, particularly skilled positions. How is National Grid responding to that, perhaps partly with wage increases, if that's the case? And on this subject that we're talking about, do you do anything in particular to incentivize older workers to stay on past the point where they might have retired?
Sure. Well, let me first say, I mean, it's a great time to be a candidate in the market. You know, with unemployment so low, there has never been a better time to be a candidate, because you're now going to be having companies and industries touting for your skills. So, and we're acutely aware of that. We know that what we offer in terms of compensation and benefits in some areas needs to be competitive, but we also have an obligation to our ratepayers. You know, we are a regulated utility, and we have an obligation to be able to show that what we pay, the benefits that we offer, can be justified as being value added to our customers. Every bit of income that we get is given to us by customers who pay their bills. So we cannot be frivolous. So we have to do a lot of work to analyze what are our competitors doing, what are the movements in the market, and how do we respond accordingly. What have we done specifically around benefits? Well, we are, we've recently launched, in fact, yesterday, we launched a caregiver program. We're looking at a suite of benefits in the company now that are looking at targeting people at different points in their career with the company. The caregiver benefits cover people who have just started out a family, who need support around childcare, but it also extends to people who may be caring for an elderly or sick relative, because we know that given the fact that society is aging, not just our workforce, the chances are that most of our employees will at some point be required to care for an elderly or sick relative in their life. And we recognize that, and we want to be able to provide support to people so that they can continue to flourish in their career, but get the support that they need outside of work as well. And we recognize that. And we're looking at a number of other solutions around benefits that will help people to make choices about their career rather than give up work early when they're simply not ready to do that. One of the things that we recognize in our workforce is many of our field workers feel compelled that they have to retire and that that's the only option available to them. We don't agree with that, and we're challenging that conventional thinking. We think, let's have a conversation early on with our employees that says, you are nearing retirement age, but let's have a conversation about what you want to do, because there is tremendous value you can continue to add to our business, whether it be retraining, whether it be going into a back office position within the company, so that actually we can help them facilitate a phased retirement rather than what many employees have traditionally experienced, which is they reach the retirement age and they have no choice but to retire. And we think that challenging those conventional wisdoms of the past is really where the value can be in getting the most out of our workforce long after they reach retirement eligibility.
Last question, Keith. I wanted to take a little bit more of a global perspective. Obviously, our listeners can tell from your accent that you're not from Massachusetts. You're from Scotland, right?
I am, yes.
And I wanted to commend you because I heard you say X, Y, and Z before, and your countrymen might not appreciate that, but you've adapted pretty well to America by not saying X, Y, and Z. So I wanted to give you credit for that. But, you know, National Grid is a longstanding UK company. I believe you've worked in both places. Can you explain any differences between the US and UK on the issue of employing older workers, or are they in pretty similar situations?
Firstly, thank you for recognizing my transition to the US. I work very hard and get a lot of pressure from my colleagues to adapt to the lingo, so I'm glad to get the recognition. I don't believe there is much of a difference, and I think it's more of an industry challenge, and I think that's not unique to the United States. I think it's the same challenge in the UK. The amount of investment that we place in the skilled workforce, the highly skilled and capable workforce that we have in the US and the UK requires years of investment. And our assets are the same. You know, they may differ in design, but ultimately they are assets that have been designed to withstand and exist for many decades to come. And many of the assets that we manage, that we maintain today, have been around for decades as well. And that's the same in the UK. Our workforces are broadly similar in terms of their career trajectory and age profile. I would say that we have a larger workforce here in the US. And so we are probably facing a more acute challenge around that than the UK. But the path is very similar. I would say that one of the things that we are spearheading for the company in the US is looking more at experienced workers. We've got an initiative at the moment which is looking at how we can attract and retain experienced workers more in National Grid. And we're going to start that work off in the US simply because our workforce numbers are greater in the US and unemployment is coming down rapidly as well. Any learnings that we have or that we're able to take from that work, we will absolutely apply to the UK and help the business in the UK do that. But the great thing is we can test and trial and experiment with some of these ideas and initiatives in the US because there's such great opportunity to do that. And the UK will undoubtedly take any best practice that we can offer.
All right. Keith Hutchison of National Grid, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
Benchmark will be back next week. Until then, you can find us on the Bloomberg Terminal, Bloomberg.com, our Bloomberg app, and podcast destinations such as Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen. We'd love it if you took the time to rate and review the show so more listeners can find us. You can also check us out on Twitter. Follow me at Scott Landman. Chris, you're at
Chris J. Condon.
Our guest, Gene Setzfan from AARP, is at JSETZ. And our guest, Keith Hutchison from National Grid, is at HUTCHISONKR. Benchmark is produced by Topher Forges. The head of Bloomberg Podcasts is Francesca Levy. Thanks for listening. See you next time.
The countdown has begun. From May 14th to 16th, 1,000 global leaders will gather in Doha for the Qatar Economic Forum powered by Bloomberg. Join heads of state, influential ministers, and leading CEOs to make new connections, gain unique insights, and uncover valuable opportunities in one of the world's most rapidly rising regions. Request your invite for this exclusive event at QatarEconomicForum.com.